welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people, just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Ron's not here with us today.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Gemma Tiffany Rosewater. Gemma is a student, and in her quest to raise awareness about hyperacusis and other rare disorder chronic pain conditions, she would like to push for more research to be done and have laws passed to accommodate those with hyperacusis. She started a website, Instagram, Facebook, and a YouTube channel called A Hyperacusis Awareness. I mean, I've got to hand it to you. You are a dynamo already, and I haven't even met you in person. And if we haven't already said it enough, she is joining us today to talk about hyperacusis. Welcome to the show, Gemma.
Yeah, hi, Gemma.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And Gemma, could you start out by telling our listeners what exactly is hyperacusis?
So hyperacusis is a rare and painful hearing disorder that causes people to experience physical pain from normal everyday sounds. There are different degrees and severity. Some people have mild hyperacusis and some people have very severe hyperacusis. Symptoms can also vary. Some patients also have tinnitus spikes or vertigo. Some patients can get migraines from the noise. And a very severe hyperacusis can be a very life-changing and debilitating condition.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yes. What symptoms led you to your diagnosis?
Well, when I was around six, really loud noises like the cafeteria or assemblies and stuff were painful just for my ears, and I would wear earplugs, and I was able to be okay with that until second grade. I started getting really bad migraines, and then every little sounds started giving me, triggering my migraine attacks. And at first they just said I had chronic migraines. And then in the third grade, our mom took me to see an audiologist, and they diagnosed me with hyperacusis.
Wow.
Well, that's a lot to take in.
Yes, for sure. So the symptoms themselves, they weren't enough to make the diagnosis. You had to go and have some testing at an audiologist. What exactly did they do to test you for this?
I believe at the time they took a hearing test, and then they just kind of had me describing my symptoms. And so that's how they made the diagnosis of hyperacusis. Unfortunately, that doctor was only, as many audiologists are, familiar with the desensitization protocol. And back, that was 8 years ago, there was not very much research done on pain hyperacusis, which meant that for most of my life until about the past year and a half, I've kind of been subjected to a lot of very painful treatments that have worsened my condition.
Oh, geez, I'm so sorry.
You're saying that they used desensitization? So in other words, they tried to
expose you to more sound
in order to try to fix it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible. I'm so sorry that you went through that.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I can't even imagine. Can't even imagine.
But you know what?
Yeah, it was very painful.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I'm glad that they're, you said in the past year, you
they've
know,
come up with
they've
some
come
kind
up
of...
with some things. And I guess medicine every year there's growth in medicine and hopefully change in medicine, and we're learning more about the human body.
Mm-hmm.
I too am so sorry to hear that. Do they know what the underlying cause is for this condition?
They do not. I'm actually in contact with two researchers, Paul Fuchs and Dr. Fangang Zhang, and I've been reaching out to some other scientists. Right now, they have hypothetical mechanisms, mm-hmm. three hypothetical causes for the pain. The first is Paul Fuchs recently discovered that the cochlear has these type 2 neurons that are actually pain fibers that had previously been overlooked because there's only 5% of the cells.
Oh, wow.
And, yes, and so they think that in some people, the overactivation of those cells and the underactivation of the type 1s, because many people with hyperacusis, including myself, in noisy environments, are also not able to understand speech. And so that has to do with connectivity of type 1s, and that could possibly be a cause for pain hyperacusis. The other possible cause they're looking into is some of the muscles and bones in the middle ear, which are actually, they just discovered a link between those and the trigeminal nerve, which would explain why me and so many other patients experienced migraines and head mm-hmm. and facial pain
mm-hmm.
from the noise. And then the third possible cause they're looking into is once the auditory signal reaches the brain, that it may be going to some of the wrong cortexes, such as the pain cortex or other cortexes, which could contribute to how some patients lose their balance or have seizures or different types of things from noise.
I see.
Yeah,
okay.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And we have spoken with individuals with trigeminal neuralgia before, and that is, you know,
a horrible pain as well.
Yeah, that's a horrible pain as well. And adding that upon your additional pain, that's difficult. That's very difficult. I'm glad that they're doing more research and that they'll continue to do research.
Definitely. I know we weren't going to ask this, but do you live in a large city that has access to research like this? Or do you have to travel far to get that?
Well, and for the most part, I live in between Baltimore and Washington, D.C.
Perfect.
We live in the Howard County area. So we do have access to Johns Hopkins and other hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, though, I've reached out to a lot of the research scientists online through phone calls and email.
Okay. You're a very wonderfully talented young lady. I think you're going to go far in this world.
Absolutely.
We're going to see your name somewhere, because just the steps that you've taken already to try to find a cure, and everything that you're doing is way beyond your years.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Gemma, have you heard... Probably not. Had you heard of hyperacusis before your diagnosis? And do you know anybody else with it, like family or friends?
So I had never heard of that word before I started getting pain from sound. My family had never heard of it. Now that I have it, actually, the unfortunate thing was that when I was younger, I did not know anyone who had hyperacusis. I did not even know anyone until I was 9 who had any type of chronic pain condition,
mm-hmm.
Until my TBI, who had one, teacher of the visually impaired students. And then when I was 12, I had the opportunity to meet a young woman from Delaware who she had not, unfortunately, been diagnosed, but she had she got pain from sounds, but when she was growing up, they didn't even recognize it, and they thought it was just a mental illness. Oh. I now, when I was 13, joined a support group on Facebook, Hyperacusis Research and Support, and I have managed to meet a lot of other amazing advocates with severe hyperacusis, as well as through my website and my social media to raise awareness. A lot of people have reached out to me. So I'm trying to also, one of my big things is to put in place, this is the other reason I've been reaching out with researchers, different things, establish clinical guidelines in the medical community to protect patients who report noise-induced pain, including on the pediatric level, and to increase communication between the research doctors and the clinicians so that they're more up to date on new research. And I'm also trying to put in place support programs for people who have hyperacusis so that they can speak with other people who have it. I started a patient education and support program to connect people who've been living with it for a long time with people who are new to it. I have a secret teen group that I started because I noticed that there weren't any groups specifically for teens or young people with the condition. And then an education and accommodations training for people who have a close relationship with someone who has it.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Wow. You are very, very busy. And how has your healthcare team, how have they, can they treat, is there a treatment for this condition, or how have they approached it? I know you said in the past, the approach was probably
not what you needed.
Right. Not what you needed, but what is their current approach?
Right now, there's not really much because there isn't really a treatment or a cure for it. So we're kind of just managing from day to day, just trying to make things as quiet as possible or using different types of, I use different types of electrical nerve stimulation devices, like TENS and Cephaly to try to manage the pain. But right now, there's not too much that they can do at the moment. And unfortunately, a lot of the new research, my doctors are aware of it because I've kind of made them aware of it myself. When I was a kid, actually, I started doing research when I was 11. And I would write research papers to my doctors.
And do noise-canceling headphones help at all?
They help somewhat. I do have noise-canceling headphones as well as earplugs. Mm-hmm. Even with the headphones or earplugs, I'm still not able to do things like the sound of my microwave is painful, or music, or like my phone. I have it set on a flash, or running bath water, different things are still painful for me.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's terrible.
Yeah.
And I know that that you're part of the bill that you're trying to get passed is so that you can do distance learning because your school wouldn't allow it. Is that correct?
So I am trying to get a bill passed called Title VI, Telepresence and High-Level Sensory Notification. It would definitely cover my schooling, and not just schooling, but it would cover work and any places of public accommodations. Our county, before COVID-19, did not do distance learning, but COVID-19 has kind of proved to them that it is possible. So I have actually reached out to the director of our county's Department of Special Education, who I had a previously established a relationship with, to let her know how it has benefited me. And I wrote an article in our school newspaper about how it benefits chronically ill students. The bill that I'm working to try to get passed would basically require that all services, I actually wrote this up, the preamble and everything, and I've met with Senator Ben Cardin's office, as well as Senator Chris Van Hollen's office, to ask them to introduce it to Congress. And I have a meeting later this week with Representative Kwayizi Mfume to ask him to do the same. And the short version requires that all services, facilities, and activities either provide a person who has a condition who would otherwise be in pain, ill, or unable to participate due to the sensory and other environmental factors, with either a virtual option that meets online accessibility standards, modify the sensory or other environmental factors to meet their needs, or provide them with a separate specialized environment to meet their needs.
Isn't that a shame that the American with Disabilities Act didn't just take care of all of this for you?
Well,
it totally should have. I agree.
That's a shame that your condition, and I'm sure a lot of people that are in your boat, just got left behind. That's a shame. I'm glad. You're doing
such
a good job.
Sorry, that's a military thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
we're thankful that there are people like you out there advocating for others and also just, you know, making change happen. So thank you. And yeah, that's amazing. I'm sorry that it took COVID to show them that it's possible, and but maybe that, you know, that's the impetus, and that'll make everything a little bit easier. And we're looking forward to hearing from those senators and representatives to find out what they're going to do to try to push this bill forward. Mm-hmm. Have you had any support during this journey? Friends, family, medical caregivers, teachers?
So yes, I, my mother, even she's always, been there for me, and, she does a lot of, things, like she drives me away from, when there are power tools, and, I have several other conditions in addition to my hyperacusis, and whatnot. Now, when I was younger, oftentimes, because of a lot of the misinformation that was around at the time, or more so lack of information about hyperacusis, she did go along with a lot of the things that the doctors were saying. Like she said, though, she wasn't trying to harm me, though I am hard to see that at the time. It was what they had thought was truly helpful. She now, though, said she always believed that I did get pain. That was one of the things a lot of people did not. And then other people who have been big for me are one of my vision teachers. I think I mentioned her before. Before I knew anyone who had hyperacusis, she was the first person I met who had some type of chronic pain. And then some of my mentors who are visually impaired. I'm also low vision, legally blind. They've been such as Melissa and Mrs. Sharon, very helpful and supportive as well. And my grandmother, she lets me go in her underground basement and always would let me come over to her house and keep me when my mom was going traveling because I'm not able to travel.
Yeah, it's got to just be a lot of difficulty in your life. I was just thinking when you were talking about the basement for your grandmother, things like fireworks. I mean, that's got to be horrendous.
Yes, on the 4th of July, she fortunately lives in a cul-de-sac, which is mostly has older people, and so I stay down in the her underground basement on the 4th of July. We always go over there.
Right.
To try to get away from the fireworks.
Yeah. Yes, that's good.
And Gemma, how common is this condition?
So, one in every 50,000 people is diagnosed with it. However, as I've found out from a lot of people who found my Instagram page and also my friend Layla, who she's an adult, the one who actually has never been diagnosed, and she tries to connect with a lot of kids who have different types of rare or painful conditions. And she said a lot of people are either not diagnosed or misdiagnosed, and they can have very severe hyperacusis where they're in pain. But most people have never, most of the medical field has never heard of it. And so it's often misdiagnosed as just an anxiety or OCD, sometimes depression, ADHD, autism, or different conditions like that. That's one of the other things I'm trying to do is I submitted a proclamation to my governor, and we're having different people in our hyperacusis group submit to their governors in different states to have February 6th through 13th declared Hyperacusis Awareness Week, which we're hoping would help in general raise more awareness about the condition.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Great. That's great.
And we'll make sure that we put it on our calendars.
Definitely, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely make note of it on this end.
Mm-hmm.
I had a strange question. Can you tell the difference between hyperacusis and, let's say, an ear infection pain?
I haven't really had an ear infection. However, I think the main difference would probably be that the ear infection, unless the person has hyperacusis, should not be made worse by noise or seem to have, if the pain seems to be directly associated from sound,
right?
Then that would be hyperacusis.
Right, okay. Right. Okay. I was just kind of curious if it would be worse, but
okay.
All right. And what do you wish people knew about hyperacusis, and what can everybody do to help people with this condition?
I wish that people knew that people with hyperacusis are in real pain. It's not all in their heads, and that the best thing you can try to do, two things. Try to get to know the person's needs in terms of noise and provide them with an environment or situation that is not going to cause them pain. Mm-hmm. And number two, I would say, would be to try to be empathetic and understanding. You know, don't call them crazy or that they're overreacting or too sensitive. That's on top of all of the physical pain they're already dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
That's very emotionally hurtful.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We have found out through many of our interviews that there are many hidden illnesses that people suffer with that they're just not obvious. It's not that, you know.
Right, you might not be able to recognize.
Right, you can't see it, but it's there, and
right.
It's serious, and people just need to be a little bit more empathetic.
That's, yeah, great advice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gemma.
And Gemma, do you have any advice for someone that was recently diagnosed with hyperacusis?
Yes, my advice would be you are the expert in your bodies, not necessarily the doctors, and to do your own research and know, one, there is not a lot of information about hyperacusis out there right now. And number two, to listen to your body. If something is painful or hurting you, a treatment or a situation, to listen to your body and go with that and do what you need to do in order to protect yourself.
That's excellent.
Yeah, wonderful advice.
Great advice.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for joining our show today, Gemma. And due to your condition, we're not going to go through our show credits that we normally do at the end. We'll just end it here, and we'll patch in.
Later.
Yeah,
but
our editor can patch in the ending after this.
But our listeners are going to want to know, how can they learn more about you and this bill and other supports?
So you can check out for more information about the work I'm doing for hyperacusis awareness and some of the different support programs that I have set up or the bills or projects. You can check out hyperacusis. It would be H. Getting it up right now.
Okay. And we'll make sure we have links for everything on our website as well.
Okay. So https://hyperacusis, which is hyperacusis.wordpress.com/. And then if you want to find more of the, because I'm not necessarily a research cause, I follow and work very closely with hyperacusis research and President Brian Pollard of hyperacusis research. Mm-hmm. And that would be just if you Google hyperacusis research, that should come up, hyperacusisresearch.org.
Okay. That's great. I'll put a link for that on
yes,
our website
absolutely.
As well.
And then I just had one more question. When we spoke with someone with trigeminal neuralgia and someone who had phantom pain from limb loss, a quad amputee, they both said that they had tried ketamine and that had assisted with their pain as well. And it's something that they did. They went in and during a hospital stay, the ketamine was administered. But because of the nerve pain is such a hard thing to deal with. Have you ever tried that, or is that something you might try in the future?
I have never heard of that before. Is that a drug? Or
yes,
it is.
A drug.
It's a drug, and it's an intravenous drug. They only do it in the hospital.
You have to be hospitalized for it. And we spoke with,
Pam?
No, the quad amputee.
Oh, Travis Mills.
Travis Mills. He has a movie up on Amazon about what he's been through. He said that the pain was so horrendous that he really had difficulty getting through day to day. And the ketamine, the experience was very hard because it is like a psychoactive drug, so it does have unusual side effects. While it's being administered, so you might have hallucinations and, mm-hmm. and similar things. And he said it was horrifying going through that, but he said it was the best thing he's ever done because afterwards his nerve pain was significantly reduced. And we heard comparable things from Pam about hers, and she has trigeminal neuralgia,
right,
which is considered, you know,
a terrible pain,
which in hearing that it's related to this condition is, I can understand that, but that might be just something that to think about.
Oh yes, I'm actually pulling up information about this right now while
there
we're
you go.
Talking.
Yes.
Okay. I've never heard of it.
Oh, okay.
We've been learning quite a bit.
Little bit.
The last couple of years of, yeah. you know, of speaking with people, and that's the goal of our stories, is to share information.
Right.
And you know, every person has a story, and this story might help somebody else, and that's
Absolutely.
What we're hoping that we can do.
Oh yes, I would hope that my journey living with hyperacusis would definitely be able to help someone else, and that's really what I want to do.
Yes.
Especially I want to try to befriend and mentor younger kids who have my condition.
You're an amazing girl.
Do you think you'll pursue a career in teaching or medicine?
I actually want to be a writer and author.
Oh.
I just finished the rough draft of my first novel, Alien Princess,
okay.
Which actually my main character has hyperacusis.
Okay.
And my mom and I are working with an editor right now to edit it. And then I'm going to indie publish.
Okay.
And I'm part of something called the Young Writers Workshop, so I'm learning a lot about publishing and whatnot. And in addition to that, I'm trying to build some of my career in advocacy.
Okay.
I want to do what's called authorpreneuring, which is where I sell my books and make money, and also through other services such as being paid to write articles or submissions. I was paid to write an article about distance and virtual access needing to continue
mm-hmm.
after COVID-19 for a literary journal, and then offering like writing tutoring and then virtual speaking services in mm-hmm. addition to my books.
Excellent.
Amazing.
Excellent.
A whole bunch of stuff. Are you part of the We Go Health group?
I am, yes.
Okay.
Great.
Friend Marie told me about We Go Health.
Okay. Super.
And there's, you're reminding me, there's a series of books that are kind of the subject matter can be a bit risque. But it's called Red Sparrow, and they actually made it, one of the books, into a movie. But what they left out of that was that the main character has synesthesia. And so she's a spy with synesthesia, and she utilizes that, what some people would call a disability, to help her in her work. And it's kind of, that's what makes the book fascinating. So, We're very excited. We look forward to reading your writing.
Oh, yes, we're going to have to get that book.
Absolutely. Let us know, and we will definitely buy a copy.
Definitely.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I will let you guys know. And I think you guys already follow both of my accounts.
Yes, we do. And we'll look. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on them as well. Yeah, and And we just had author photos actually taken today, because we wrote a book together, and it is being published later this year too. So we'll have to do author interviews.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. But that's very, very exciting.
Yes, and Maryland Library for the Blind has offered to get my book on Bard Mobile, and NFB is going to help me get it on Bookshare so that all of my visually impaired friends can read it as well.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's great. That's great.
That's absolutely amazing. Well, thank you for everything you're doing, and we look forward to seeing what you do in the future.
Yes, this was really a delight talking to you.
And thank you for being so patient with us with all of our technical issues as well.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
And I'm glad you're feeling better. You're
yes,
welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome.
And we hope you continue to have, you know, good health and, you know, and just, yeah, let us know how everything goes.
Okay, I will.
And all we'll right. be sending you a copy, like we said, a couple of days before we would publish
okay.
it, and then you give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Gemma.
Have a great day, Gemma.
All right. You too. Bye.
So if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And as always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.